It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Efforts are underway to develop the first ever guidelines for the diagnosis and treatment of adult ADHD. As diagnosed cases of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder in America increase, thanks to Christine Stevens Point, by the way, for suggesting the focus of this conversation.
I feel like a lot of attention is given on ADHD diagnoses for children, and oftentimes that's when problems present. But there are a lot of people who go through their childhood undiagnosed and find out in adulthood that it's something they've struggled with.
Colin, with your question, your concerns about adults managing ADHD, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Allison Kravitz is a licensed clinical psychologist and certified advanced ADHD coach with a practice in Mequon. Allison, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
The Journal of Global Health says ADHD is often thought of as a disorder mostly affecting children. We heard there Christy mentioning that. But about 7% of adults globally have symptomatic ADHD. That's hundreds of millions of adults worldwide. How are symptoms of ADHD different in childhood versus adulthood?
Well, mostly children externalize their symptoms. And now I'm not talking about females in general. That H, the hyperactive, I hear all the time, I'm not hyperactive. Well, you can't be an adult and climb excessively on things. You know, there, everything becomes more internal. And because it's more internal, it starts to look like other things like anxiety or racing thoughts and things like that. So if you're not externally seeing like the fidgetiness or the look like driven like a motor or by a motor, then we assume that it's not ADHD.
Is there,
and kids grow out of that.
And kids grow out of that, but some don't. And it can also, carry on in the lifespan, in adulthood. Is there a way that adults can, explain or self-report how they feel about their symptoms? How does that screening work?
Well, right now it's every practitioner has their own way of doing things. I really pay attention to time. People with ADHD can't estimate time. It's more how they feel about time. So if you feel like something's going to take forever, then they put it off. Even if when they start it, they realize it only took 5 minutes. Or they feel like they can get something done before they have to go, but then they're late. So it's how they feel about time. It's not actually estimating time. People with ADHD need more to get activated to a task. So what may look like being lazy or something like that is actually not. They have this internal battle in their mind about doing the task. They really want to do the task. They know they have to do the task, but they can't make themselves do the task until some other element comes in, like pressure or novelty or interest. So it's more things like that when it comes to adults versus I just can't pay attention. The symptoms that we think about, like inattention and hyperactivity, that's like only 10% of what people with ADHD actually experience.
The American Society of ADHD and Related Disorders is going to be writing the first ever authoritative guidelines for adults for adult ADHD. How might these guidelines change the current screening, the current process of obtaining a diagnosis as an adult?
Hopefully it makes it so more practitioners are aware of what ADHD looks like in adults. Right now in mental health, we're misdiagnosing about 90% of teenagers, adults, and females.
Wow.
Just because it looks different. Like, for example, people who do well in school can also have ADHD. That's not end-all be-all when it comes to ADHD. So I hear all the time, well, I was told I did too well in school, so I can't have it. Well, that's not true.
I wonder, too, there could be positive traits like creativity or inventiveness.
Yes.
What can you tell us there?
So people with ADHD The way that their brain works, right behind your forehead, is called the prefrontal cortex. And that acts as like an intersection through which everything we pay attention to, every behavior and judgment, every emotional response run through this intersection for every person. But with ADHD, it's not regulated. So the fastest car or the strongest message gets through first. So instead of viewing the task and getting from A to B to C, they see all the ways of getting to C, and nothing is filtered out,
Thank
which
you.
also causes distractibility and things like that. But you know, the flip side of impulsivity is creativity. You can't be creative on demand, right? So people with ADHD have figured out ways to do things that, you know, maybe neurotypical people don't do that way, but they still get it done, in order to be able to survive in our world.
We're talking about ADHD in adults with Allison Kravitt, a licensed clinical psychologist, certified advanced ADHD coach. You can join in with your questions, your comments at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Mary in Pewaukee. Mary, hi.
Hi, good morning.
Good
Thank
morning.
you for the show. And I wanted to ask, it's a comment and a question. As far as my husband found out that he has ADHD when he met his daughter 3.5 years ago, so that he did not know previously. And also their the three his daughter's three children, so our grandchildren also have ADHD. So it's an ongoing issue. But right now, I believe there is a shortage. According to her, she has checked every pharmacy and can't locate it. What does a person do, number one? And number two, can you verify this? And what is the cause? Or do we know why there is a shortage of the medication to help people with their disability or some, you know, syndrome?
Mary, thank you for that. Allison, can you give us any details currently about the shortage of Adderall and other medications?
So, yes, there is definitely a shortage of medication. One of the reasons that recently came out is because the drug makers made 1 billion less doses than they were able to. So the it's a controlled substance. And let me back up a second. What the stimulant medication does for ADHD is like what glasses does do for people that need them. It makes what's already there work how it's supposed to. So it puts traffic lights on that intersection. Pills don't teach skills, so it's not the only thing that you can do, but it is very helpful in about like 85 to 90% of people with ADHD because it's making what's already there work how it's supposed to. But so the FDA says you can make this many doses, and they made 1 billion less for some reason.
And
I don't know why.
that's how we got to this shortage as of right now. You, being a psychologist, specializing in ADHD, you have a close connection to this. Can you share your personal experiences, with ADHD?
Sure. So my husband has ADHD, which is how I actually learned about what ADHD looks like in adults. We didn't learn that in grad school for being a psychologist. I had to, you know, read books out there of what's going on in my relationship to understand what ADHD was. During that learning process, I realized I also have ADHD, and then one definitely of my kids has ADHD, and probably two so far out of three. So it's everywhere in my life.
How does that affect your relationships?
So the main way that ADHD can affect a relationship is something called rejection sensitive dysphoria, which is the tendency to perceive criticism where none in fact exists. So if I come home and say, "Did you do the dishes?" my husband hears, "I know you didn't do the dishes," you know, and responds accordingly. That's not what I said. So he hears criticism. And that's because by the time a kid has reached sixth grade, diagnosed or not, they've heard 20,000 more criticisms than a kid without ADHD. So,
Wow. Clinical
but
psychologist.
understanding that helps a lot.
understanding that you know what those experiences are like with that diagnosis. Clinical psychologist Allison Kravitz with us has a practice in Mequon, treats adult patients with ADHD as we discuss later in life diagnoses and lifelong struggles. Be part of the conversation. Call in with a question. Share your concerns. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to Verona-based Epic Research, the number of ADHD patients is rising across the lifespan, particularly among women. For adults, the American Psychological Association says undiagnosed symptoms of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder can lead to chronic stress and to low self-esteem. Call in with your questions and comments at any point, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. We have licensed clinical psychologist Allison Kravitz with us and certified advanced ADHD coach. Let's go to Mark now in Elgin, Illinois. Mark, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Oh, hi. My question is to get her opinion about basically the dearth of long-term research studies, particularly on using medications, Ritalin, et cetera, to treat ADHD, and the long-term lack of effectiveness of these medications. That if you look at any longitudinal study, there isn't any research to support as if there's some kind of magic pill to solve ADHD. That is, that simply is not out there. At least the research isn't there. But as a teacher, I see it all the time with parents looking for the simple solution. And even in my own daughter, I don't see the drug benefit connection. And if she could speak to that.
Mark, thank you for sharing your personal story. Allison, go ahead.
Actually, there is a longitudinal study. It came out a couple of years ago. It was a 40-year follow-up study of someone that takes the medication every day for 40 years. There are no physical effects of taking that medication. It's the safest, most well-researched medication we have in the field of psychiatry. And like I said, it helps about 85 to 90% of people with ADHD. And I'm talking about the stimulants, not the non-stimulant options. But it is also not a magic pill. Like I said before, pills don't teach skills, right? So it's a tool, but it's not the end all be all in ADHD treatment. The research shows that the best treatment comes from both skill building or therapy and the medication. But the medication alone is better than therapy alone in ADHD.
As we talk about medication, can you talk about therapy here, what you mean by that and what those options look like?
Like what type of therapy?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So cognitive behavioral therapy, which is your cognitions or your thoughts drive your behavior, that has been shown to be helpful with ADHD. People with ADHD need active solutions a lot. Like we look at the process of things, and this is more my coaching than therapy, but the outcome is that you were late or that you forgot something or whatever, that's the outcome. The process is everything that leads up to that, because that's what needs to be intervened upon. And that's what's going to be different for each person. You know, if we're talking about a planner, there's a very different second step from I forgot I had one, never took it out of my bag, never used it, and I don't like this format. Hmm. All right. So build upon what works to create different systems that work with somebody with ADHD's brain instead of against it.
Let's bring in Shauna in Milwaukee. Shauna, hi. Go ahead.
Good morning. So I'm a therapist and I work with youth with significant trauma histories. And one thing that I commonly experience is a lot of my youth have ADHD diagnoses. And I know that trauma symptoms and ADHD symptoms often are very, very similar, and doing differential diagnosis with that can be difficult. So we often find that ADHD medicine supports our youth as they are learning the skills that you're talking about. I'm curious about how that relates to adults with ADHD and potential trauma histories as well, in terms of how trauma history affects the treatment of ADHD.
Shauna, thank you. Allison.
So there's been some research that has come out about the link between post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, and ADHD, you're right, it is difficult to tease out what's what, I guess. Before the trauma, are we seeing some of these symptoms or not? And is it pervasive in somebody's life, or is it just in one area of life? You know, because you can have both. It could be just trauma, and it could be just ADHD, but the research shows that if you have something, whether that be a medical condition or a mental health condition that's chronic, like childhood trauma is in adulthood, if it's not treated, then ADHD tends to show up as well.
Allison Kravitt with us, licensed clinical psychologist, certified advanced ADHD coach, as we talk about ADHD in adults. And field your questions and comments at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Allison, the Wisconsin chapter of Mental Health America says adults with ADHD may experience low self-esteem and negative perceptions of themselves. Do ADHD treatments that we've been talking about here help adults with these feelings of low self-esteem?
Yes. A lot of things that help with that would be the psychoeducation and understanding why things are happening for people, because it's very frustrating, because as a group, people with ADHD have high IQs. They're very smart. And like I said before, they want to do the things. They can't make themselves do the things. So if you want to do something, you know you can do something, but it's not happening, and you don't know that it's ADHD, well, then what's the other answer? The answer is that it's me. I'm the problem, right? So that's where it comes from. People with ADHD try so hard not to mess up, but eventually it happens, and they blame themselves a lot of the time.
How can partners of adults with ADHD best support their loved ones?
I believe the most important thing is understanding it, because ADHD is a reason. It's not an excuse, but it is a reason. And it's a reason for a lot more than we used to think. It's very easy to take symptoms personally. For example, if my husband is late, I could think that he doesn't respect my time. I could think that he doesn't care about what I care about, or is disrespectful in some way. And that's a character flaw, but really he can't estimate time in his mind. So it's not any of those things. I don't need to take that personally. I could help, like, what can I do to help you be more on time? You know, mm-hmm. Do we need timers? It's something as simple as that. But it's understanding. That's the most important thing.
What accommodations could adults managing ADHD, what accommodations could they seek at work to improve their mental health and their outcomes?
So a lot of the times I'm asking for clear instructions on things, because people with ADHD tend to procrastinate or not do things for one of four reasons. One is they don't know where to start. It feels too big. You know, something is unclear, but they haven't started, so they don't know what it is that's not unclear, but something's unclear, so they're not doing it. Or they don't want to do the thing after the thing. So if I don't do this thing, I don't have to do that thing, right? So clear instructions would be helpful, like templates of emails. Sometimes when emails are late, people tend to just avoid them altogether because they're embarrassed. But just understanding what the issue is, and then asking for accommodations for that specific thing would be helpful in the workplace.
Do you think asking for more time on certain projects, or is time a tricky thing?
Time is a tricky thing, because if you have more time for something, people think, oh, I have all the time in the world, right? I don't have to do it. And they still wait till that last minute. So if anxiety becomes a factor, and perfectionism is a factor. Maybe more time would be helpful, but really people with ADHD respond well to deadlines and structure.
Clinical psychologist Allison Kravitt in Mequon fielding questions about adult ADHD, and you can join the discussion at any point. Call in with a question. You can share your perspective. The number to join in, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As rates of ADHD diagnoses among adults are on the rise, we discuss how to navigate treatment later in life, and you can be part of the conversation along the way. Call in with a question, share your insights at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Allison Kravitt is a licensed clinical psychologist and certified ADHD coach. Let's bring in Christy in Stevens Point. Hi, Christy. Go ahead.
Hi. This is Christy from Stevens Point. I was excited to hear the topic.
Thank you. Yes.
Today.
We must thank you for this. It's all you. Go ahead.
So my question, and I am an adult woman with ADHD, but had gone in my early 30s to therapy, thinking depression, like I was dealing with some of the things that she mentioned before, some anxiety or the struggles. And thankfully, my therapist, there's actually two of them who recognized things I was sharing that made them think, hey, let's look into some ADHD and explore this a little bit. So I'm wondering from your guest, like what she looks for in patients that make her think that they might be struggling with ADHD versus some of the other things that people are diagnosed with, like depression or anxiety.
Thank you, Christy. Allison.
Sure. A lot of the times people come to me for diagnosis and they say, I have been treated for depression and anxiety for years, sometimes decades, and nothing has worked. Then they talk about feeling unable to do things or feeling, you know, unorganized, or they can't maintain an organizational system, or, you know, some change has, like kids, especially women, has tipped the balance of their systems and routines so that all of a sudden they are unable to do what they feel like they could do before. In women, we are better able to multitask anyway. We have a lot of high functioning women that something happened, new job, kids, something like that, the pandemic, and all of a sudden their systems are disrupted and now they can't do what they used to be able to do. So I look for a lot of big changes, previous treatments that just have something's missing, something like that.
Does ADHD have different degrees of severity?
It does. So it's how your brain works. Does it work this way or does it not? And then how much does it affect you?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's not your brain is 75% ADHD. No, it's your brain works this way, but like, have you learned to compensate for it or not?
Mm-hmm. What is it like to grow up undiagnosed and not be able to learn that you have ADHD until you are an adult and you know you have this history of struggles and yet it went undiagnosed? What is that like?
So for me, school came very easily to me, and I would find myself doing my homework 5 minutes before class, and I didn't have to put in a lot of effort to get straight A's, I was told a lot that I need to find my passion and you just don't care. But I was like, what? I'm getting A's. Like, you know, when I got to grad school and I really wanted to learn the stuff, I could not make myself read the material. And it was really frustrating. Or I would, you know, forget a lot of things at home. So like work is fine, but home is more difficult to like clean up and do that type of things. So it's very frustrating because, again, you know, you can do it, you want to do it, and you just can't make yourself.
Let's bring in Nathan in Milwaukee. Nathan, hi. What would you like to share?
Good morning. So I have an interesting question. So I was diagnosed with ADHD when I was about like 7 years old, and I feel like I was one of the first generations that it started picking up. My older brother was also diagnosed, and growing up, we both knew and know to this day that our mother was diagnosed, or not diagnosed, sorry. She most certainly has ADHD and had ADHD growing up. We were both re-diagnosed as adults with psych evals, and our mother has always just been on the edge of her age, where she was unable to get a diagnosis herself. You know, of course, in her late 30s, she was a woman and she was an adult. And at that time, it wasn't really common to be diagnosing adults with ADHD, certainly not a woman. And then now that she's 62 years old, I guess my question is, she is still very hardworking. She's got a law degree. She's got a doctorate. And she could really benefit still from stimulant treatment. How would we go about with someone that age getting a diagnosis?
Thank you for sharing your story. Yes, Nathan, Allison.
She can find somebody who is an expert in ADHD. She could come to me if she wants to. I diagnosed an 84-year-old. A couple years ago, but yeah, it's never too late to get the diagnosis and learn more about yourself and understand yourself better.
You just
have to find someone that understands it.
Would your exploration with an 84-year-old or a 62-year-old would be a similar way that you would treat someone who is much younger than that? Or would you take different approaches?
No, it'd be pretty much the same type of treatment. It's just different life circumstances that you have to navigate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's go to June in Hudson. June, hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for having this program. It's been very interesting. I'm 62. My husband's 63. And I have two children. And I did not know that what ADHD was until I had children. And although I've struggled with it all my life and did exactly what everything you're saying, felt there was something wrong with myself. I don't know why my time management skills have been terrible. I always wanted to hide and hope that nobody found out that there was something just not right. And I couldn't learn anything that I wasn't interested in or read. It was horrible trying to read something that did not interest me, and no matter how hard I tried. My husband was diagnosed when he was a kid and hated the medication. His parents were educators, and so we fought about trying to get our kids on something, and as a result, we couldn't afford it, and we never did it. And I guess, you know, as I've aged, and we lose our filters more as you age, what I'm wondering is, it gets exhausting trying to manage it as you age. I don't know exactly. I'd say the benefits are, you can hear me jumping all over the place.
That's
coming
okay.
Out loud
take,
and clear.
Take your time. It's okay.
The benefits of it is I learn by using my hands, and that's what makes me get involved or retain or find fascinating or do well in anything, is if I can figure out how to use my hands. I need to know why I need to do something or know something, which people don't like it when you ask those questions. A lot of times, but that's my way of deciding, I suppose, whether it's worth my time. But yes, I work with my hands, and I also am an artist. And so,
an artist, June. Thank you for sharing all of these personal glimpses of your life. And Allison, what have you picked up on here?
That there are people that say that they didn't like the medication when they were younger. There are so many more options now, and there are better options than what we used to have. And it's, you know, again, pills aren't skills, but it is really, can be really helpful for people no matter the age. So it's worth a try.
How common is it for women and girls to mask their symptoms, to try to hide their symptoms in order to fit in?
Very, very, very common. Very common. Either because we're born this way or we're socialized, you know, be a good girl. You know, there's an inherent need to meet authority figures' expectations. So sometimes with females, school looks fine, maybe even perfect. And it's that emotional regulation issue that you're seeing the most, which then leads to, you know, misdiagnosis of, you know, depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, something else.
Let's bring in Mike in Superior. Mike, you're on with Allison Kravitz, licensed clinical psychologist.
Hi. About 30 years ago, I went to a physician for something related to depression and anxiety, and he prescribed Adderall, and I was kind of skeptical. I'm thinking, well, what's a stimulant going to do for me? You know, I really didn't realize I had it. And the first time I took Adderall, it just slowed everything down for me. And I was like in a hardware store, and all of a sudden, it was almost like the life slowed down, and I was amazed at how effective it is. Unfortunately, it's in short supply, but I didn't know that I had it until somebody saw it and gave me some medications, and I don't take them now, but I just wanted to explain how a stimulant can actually reduce the stimulation that comes in, and it was a very thought-provoking and a real learning experience for me as far as what ADHD manifests itself as.
And when you say everything slowed down for you, was that helpful in your life?
It was dramatic. I haven't continued taking it, but at that time, you know, I was very skeptical. I thought, yeah, right, this is just another misdiagnosis. But it really made a difference. And for people who are suffering from it, I would recommend that you do try some medications, because it's just very, therapeutic to be able to have something that makes you feel like you're not always in a hurry and you have to just, you know, do things, but do them. Words escape what I felt, but it yes, did have an effect on me.
But thank you so much, Mike, for calling in. Allison, this experience with taking the medication, what do you see there?
I hear that a lot, that it's like all of a sudden can think, have one thought at a time, or can make a decision, or not function in now and not right now, which is the ADHD brain. So if you're always in the now, that means that you're not using past experiences to influence future decisions, and you're not predicting the future. So everything is a surprise. So there's this tenseness that people with ADHD carry with them. And the medication, like you said, slows it down so that they can, you know, pick the thought that they want to have in their head.
Allison Kravitz with us, licensed clinical psychologist and certified advanced ADHD coach, a practice in Mequon. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The share of Americans taking medication for ADHD, that's been climbing for years. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention citing an uptick of women in particular with ADHD prescriptions. We have clinical psychologist Allison Kravitz with us taking your calls. Let's bring in Carmen now in Twin Lakes. Carmen, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Morning. I'd like some advice on what I should do. I'm 76 years old. I could never learn to read. I couldn't pay attention to it. Quite accomplished in several things, and I've been taking methylphenidate 20 milligrams for over 10 years. And my short-term memory, I remember things from even childhood quite well, but my short-term memory is so poor. I tried Prevagen with absolutely no help, and I'm looking for a direction. I'm actually talking to my psychiatrist tomorrow, but I'd like your opinion, you know, on a direction I might give me some help.
Carmen, thank you. Side effects.
So maybe if you've been taking the same thing for the last 10 years, maybe it's time to switch up the stimulant or try something new.
And what other options? Are there a number of other options out there, Allison?
For short-term memory, it depends on what type of things you're forgetting, like leaving yourself notes or, you know, if you have to remember to like switch the laundry, holding some sort of object that reminds you to do that or putting something in your way so that you see it, that's helpful too. So really with ADHD, because of how the brain works, it's really specific to each person and what actually is happening. And so that's what they need to figure out and be your own detective of what's happening. Why did this happen? What did I forget? And then in that, if you figure out what the problem is, you are about 50%, you know, on the way to solving it.
Let's bring in Barbara in Pewaukee. Barbara, hi.
Hello. Both my sister and I recognized reading articles in the 70s about what was then called ADD. Yeah, so, because that was our life and we found ways to make it work for us. But I have worked with and have friends who have different types of ADD. For example, I have a coworker who has inattentive ADD, which is, you know, I'm just trying to learn more about it so we can have a good work relationship, and they choose not to take the medication, tried it, didn't like it, and apparently do not have a handle on coping skills. And my life is nothing but coping skills.
Barbara,
how can we be good allies?
Good allies. Barbara, thank you for calling in. How to be a good ally, be a good coworker in a situation with managing symptoms, Allison.
That's hard, I guess, would be helping the person figure out why they're dropping the ball in the ways that they are, and maybe suggesting from the outside, if they're open to it, you know, some things that maybe you see, like maybe you could try this or maybe you could try that, and not shaming the person would be really helpful too, but just trying to be a helping hand, not doing the work for them, but help them see maybe what's happening.
There are more online resources becoming available for people seeking mental health care. And this includes online therapy and psychiatry, some providers offering ADHD diagnosis online. Could online care make diagnosis more accessible, especially for women?
Maybe. Mm-hmm. So I've seen some of these online diagnoses things, and they do this whole report. And at the end, it says, go find a person that's licensed to be actually diagnosed. So I'm not sure if they've made that process better. They can't prescribe stimulants over telehealth if you're not in the same state as the provider anymore because of those pop-up places during the pandemic that were giving stimulants to everybody, even if they didn't have ADHD. And so you still have to find someone in your state to be adequately diagnosed by either a psychiatrist or psychologist.
We have a listener here who sent an email. They were diagnosed with dyslexia, and they suspect they have ADHD. Their primary care physician put them on a list to be assessed, but have made no progress toward a diagnosis. And they're wondering, how do you go about finding a specialist who can assess them for ADHD and dyslexia at an advanced age, and they're in the Madison area? Any thoughts there?
I'm not sure about specific providers, but if you find a neuropsychologist, they test more with the brain, and they do the academic testing too. But the literature shows that if you have a learning disorder like dyslexia, then there's a really high chance you also have had ADHD your whole life too.
Yes, can you
not the other way around?
Can you help us understand that intersection a little bit more? What do you find in patients with dyslexia?
When you're reading, you sound things out like at tat, right? So by the time that you've gotten to the end, maybe you forget the beginning because something else crosses your mind. It's a slow and laborious process to read something, and that, you know, can make your thoughts go a different way, and then you forget what you read. Your eyes are still going down the page, and you have to do it all over again. I'm not sure why the intersection of learning disorders and ADHD go hand in hand, but the research shows that they do.
So as we start to wrap up here, I'm wondering how you would tell people to find hope and find options if they feel like they haven't been heard with an ADHD diagnosis, or they're still searching for one. What would you say?
So there are definitely online resources that have referral lists. One is Attitude Magazine, which is attitudemagazine.com. They have a provider list. There's ADHD and Marriage by Melissa Orloff. She has a referral list. CHADD, CHADD.org, has one by state. There's the ADHD Coach Organization, ACO.org, that has lists. So find somebody in your state that lists themselves in these directories, and then, you know, that they are up to date, hopefully, with what ADHD is and how to diagnose it.
Well, Allison, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Allison Kravit is a licensed clinical psychologist and is a certified advanced ADHD coach with a practice in Mequon. If you didn't catch the entire conversation, you can visit our program page to stream. You can download more programs from The Morning Show. Visit wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.